trusty money remains the bedrock of stability. The soul of money is trust.
I think we are not paying sufficient attention to the law of unintended consequences.
In the immortal words of the Doors, the time to hesitate is through.
Awesome. How you going, man?
Good. What about Shuti?
I'm good, thank you, man. I'm really good. Yeah, I'm fantastic, actually. I get to record another one of these episodes, these conversations with fellow Bitcoiners from around the world. And it's always a huge privilege to be able to do so. So thanks for spending your scarce time and finite energy on discovering Bitcoin, man.
Of course, no worries. Always a pleasure to talk with Bitcoiners.
How did you discover Bitcoin?
I doubt I even remember. I think I had a few touch points, like most people. First time I heard about Bitcoin in 2014, but I don't think it really counts because I was in university. I was like 19. And I just heard it on the news. I think it was 4K, but might have been more. I'm not sure. But I didn't really pay attention to it. But that was like the first seed was planted. And the seed was basically about how, you know, you can get a Lambo if you invest in Bitcoin. And I think in 2017, I got more interested in investing in general. Because I never received any financial education, you know. Parents never taught me anything. Schools, I mean, it's not a surprise, but schools don't really teach you about personal finance. So that's why I just wanted to take my finances into my own hands. Mm-hmm. And I started learning everything about investing. And I think it was some random Facebook group where somebody was talking about the gains they made with crypto. So not Bitcoin, crypto. Mm-hmm. And after that, I jumped into that rabbit hole. I was a huge shitcoiner for like a whole year. I think I bought the top of 2017, which is exactly, that was 20K. And I wrote it all the way down and to rethink like my stance on Bitcoin and crypto and how they're different. And I think the beginning of my journey to become a Bitcoiner was, I don't remember who, but there was already a maximalist crowd on Twitter in early 2018. And I think somebody called me a retard because I was arguing for multi-coin world, didn't really understand, but I was swayed by the Vitalik's and the people who use big words to try to, you know, confuse you, the buzzword salads.
Totally.
It's, after being called retarded, I obviously I didn't appreciate it. So I started doing homework and after maybe 4 months, I did realize that, yeah, indeed, I was I was being a retard. And I followed the loudest voices on Bitcoin Twitter that were for Bitcoin maximalism. And this was like Seyfedin Amous, Francis Pouliot. Who else was there? There was a bunch of early people who are still active, some of them not anymore. And they played a huge part in my journey, and I hope I can do the same for future Bitcoiners. That's why you and me, we're both doing content, is to pretty much spread the message.
Yeah, spread the sound money gospel. as Synopti says. I mean, it sounds like you're a reformed shitcoiner, basically, which is, you know, what I'm curious to learn is normally if you see those exchanges occur, and they occur fairly frequently, I suppose, on Twitter, particularly Bitcoin Twitter, where, you know, an altcoiner or a shitcoiner will be having a back and forth with a Bitcoiner, whether they're a maximalist or not. And it's generally in good faith, and then the Bitcoiner just loses patience and just goes, "You're a retard, fuck off." And, you know, at that point, usually the altcoiner, shitcoiner goes either doubles down, I find, more often than not, but you didn't. You actually, I don't know, you became self-aware or something. You were just like, "Whoa, hang on a minute. Like, what was that?" Instead of reacting like a crybaby, you were like, "Hang on, let me just go do some more research here."
It was fascinating how this group had such strong opinions and they were really standing for something, you know, which wasn't the case in the crypto world. You know, people's opinions were changing all the time, and it wasn't really based on any fundamental ideas. And obviously, you know, if somebody has such a strong opinion, I have to, and maybe this is a quality of Bitcoiners, is that we're curious and we're open to being wrong. And I just, you know, I had to dig deeper and see what it was about. But of course, I could have just, you know, doubled down and
cried harder.
But yeah, now I'm glad I didn't. So now I'm not having fun staying poor.
Did you, when you rode that wave, when you rode the crash down, were you buying all the way down as well? Or were you just going, "Oh my God, what is happening right now?"
So I was buying Bitcoin and shitcoins in the beginning, but then, you know, after becoming a Bitcoiner, you know, after finding the light, the orange light, I was definitely DCAing all the way down. I've been DCAing for the last, since then. I have a weekly DCA.
And DCA is the way, for people that don't actually know what DCA is, dollar cost averaging, right? You just buy a set amount either every day, every week, every month, whatever, I guess, suits your risk, right? But I found personally DCAing weekly puts my mind at ease. It means that I'm not missing out on too many highs or lows. It's just nice and even, steady.
Yeah, and if you actually, it's probably not the best strategy if you want to maximize the amount of sats you have. So there's a few plebs have done research that actually buying lump sum is better than DCA.
Yeah, I saw this Wicked, I think, posted that something the other day, doing lump sum purchases.
Yeah, pretty much. In a lot of cases, buying lump sum is actually better. But I am a huge proponent of DCA because it takes the guesswork out of the equation, and you can just pretty much not stress about the price you're buying.
Yes.
And it gives you a peace of mind. It gives you that zen, and you can focus on things that are important in your life without constantly trying to, you know, buy the dip or time the market. Obviously, I'm a bit of a degenerate myself, so I like buying the dips, but I also have a weekly DCA plan just to automate the whole process. It takes the whole emotion away, and that's why, you know, that's why I work at Relay, because the whole product is built around DCA, and it really resonates with the way I think.
Yeah, I mean, those sorts of features and functions in stacking apps are just so crucial nowadays. And I mean, I remember in the early days, when I hadn't come across the concept of DCAing, so I was sort of lump summing, and then I'd have like a stack of fiat on the sidelines ready to execute, and would always just second guess myself. You know, if I do it now, but then tomorrow it might dip. So maybe I'll hold on till tomorrow, but then it rips a little higher and then you're like, fuck, should have got in yesterday. And then you do that a few consecutive days in a row and you just kind of ruin your mental state a little bit, as opposed to, as you say, set and forget. It's done. And come what may, you've got more sats the following week than you had the last week. And by the end of the year, you've got, you know, way more than you probably would have if you had been caught up in that anxiety. So yeah, that's interesting research. I think it was Wicked that posted that stuff about lump sum.
Yeah, could have been.
Which is, yeah, but definitely a big proponent of, it's just a savings vehicle, right? That's how you got to treat it.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, DCA allows you to focus on your own craft. You know, we're not investing experts, and DCA just takes all of that away. And but of course, I understand that buying the dip feels also good because it gives you that instant dopamine hit. But it's a rule. When you buy, Bitcoin always goes lower.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's that whole concept of savings, it gets talked around, you know, fairly frequently, I guess, in certainly on Bitcoin Twitter and stuff and in certain circles. But I don't know if it's promoted as much as it should be to the wider space. So like if you're new to Bitcoin and you are coming at it generally for number go up technology and thinking of it as an investment, particularly from like a Western perspective, that whole concept of just a savings account that actually saves and gives you a decent return over, you know, a lengthy period of time is such a cool feature of this protocol, this sound money protocol, you know, that you know that within 12 months time, you're going to have as much, if not, it's going to, the purchasing power is going to increase a little bit more within the 12 months, if not stay the same. It's not going to go down, you know, theoretically.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you bought an April last year.
Yeah, it would be great if money actually worked and did what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Save money. Yeah, I mean, in the fiat world, everybody is forced to be an investor. And I keep thinking about the potential of, what's the potential if everybody was just, you know, if there was none of this, well, basically if everybody could just, instead of trying to make money in a broken system where the money is just constantly devalued and steals time from you and your effort, if everybody could just focus on their craft, you know, artists could be artists, builders could be builders, like what would the world look on a sound money standard? Do you ever have these thoughts? Like what's the opportunity cost of having shitty money that steals from you?
Yeah. One of the things that I harp on quite a bit, sort of more privately is the concept of having a sound money to operate a business off, particularly like an agricultural business, where your input costs constantly going up and up and up and up. And so you're forced to look for cheaper and cheaper alternatives. And those cheaper and cheaper alternatives generally tend to be more synthetic and therefore destructive to the agriculture that you're pursuing, the land, the soil, etc. And so by sheer osmosis or like unconscious force, you end up wrecking your place as opposed to putting in that extra time and energy that you no longer have to chase in pursuing actual sound agricultural methods and means, you know, i.e., you know, regenerative soil health and so on and so forth. That's why I like the Bitcoin and beef components to all of this. But even just beyond that, just sheer, I mean, look at the artwork that comes out of the Bitcoin space. I can't remember that fella's name that does those pencil sketches that are like in this Gothic church style. I've retweeted Apex. Them a few times. They're just amazing. The detail, you know, fractal encrypt and the sculptures that he creates, like far out.
I mean, doing quality work always requires time. There is no cheat code to just creating pure value. And, you know, as you mentioned, fiat money skews incentives and people start thinking short term instead of long term. And, you know, like in your example, destroying the very soil that provides for them because they are chasing short-term profits. But if they could trust that the money that they save in holds its value, you know, they could have a long-term view and, you know, not think about short-term profits, but also what is the land going to look for, you know, future generations. And about art, yeah, I mean, the recent artwork by Greenpeace, Bitcoiners seem to love it. It kind of looks like fiat art to me, but I mean, it is cool, but it's, yeah, I don't know if Bitcoin fixes art. Definitely am a fan of those gothic structures because it's just, you can tell this shit took a long time to build. But yeah, I mean, a lot of Bitcoiners seem to love the Greenpeace thing. What's your opinion on it?
The skull of Satoshi. My favorite thing about that wasn't so much the artwork itself, yep, but the way in which the culture so quickly co-opted it into their fold, like within hours of it being posted online, to the point where I think it was Lena Seish had a comic strip that was very simple but just articulated it so perfectly, that whole, this is an anti-Bitcoin sculpture. Bitcoiners look at it. Oh, that's really cool. We like that. It's ours now.
Because everything is good for Bitcoin.
You know, there was jumpers and T-shirts with the skull of Satoshi started to be sold and things. And like the market just moved so swiftly and the culture just, it was quite, that was the most fascinating thing for me beyond the actual artwork. And to the artist's credit, I can't remember his name, but Von Wong or something like that.
Van Wong, yeah.
Yeah, he did kind of, he obviously got the what do they call them, the cyber hornets riled up. And, you know, rather than double down, he had an open mind and he's now, I guess, thinking twice about this $5 million Ripple investment that he was privy to, you know? So fair play. Yeah, not my style of artwork either, and that's why I think, you know, those sketches and the fractal encrypt sculptures and anything that kind of has nuance and detail and is something that you can ponder and look at for a long, long time and constantly see new things, layers and levels of meaning and detail.
Yeah, and I think another topic in the School of Satoshi conversation is that it just proves that Bitcoin is anti-fragile. Obviously, it's not a huge, like a technical attack that can cripple Bitcoin, but people are just great at adopting, just like taking attacks against Bitcoin and just like adopting them. Like the term Bitcoin maximalism was invented by Vitalik a few years back, and now Bitcoiners are, you know, they're proud Bitcoin maximalists. And it's the same with this artwork. You know, if you believe what you stand for, you're, you know, totally unapologetic. You don't give a fuck. And yeah, obviously, Bitcoiners, and that's the thing about art, it's subjective. People, while some people see destruction in the School of Satoshi, which is what the artist also intended to show, but Bitcoiners just see the beauty, you know.
Yeah.
They just see the beauty and the good things in the art.
He had those stacks, you know, those emission stacks on the top of the head. And, you know, I thought that was stupid, and I know a lot of Bitcoiners pointed it out, but, you know, those nuclear stacks are effectively, they're water vapor, so they're not pollutants. But they are iconically tied with some semblance of pollution, I suppose. But, yeah, it was a little off base. But, yeah, I mean, the pace of the culture to respond to it, and in such a way that, as you said, they just don't care. They're just like, wow, that's really cool. That's ours now. We're going to adopt it and make it ours.
Yeah, and there is a – I mean, Bitcoin is robust, technically speaking, but there's also this social layer that, you know, Bitcoiners, Bitcoin maximalists that also, you know, a few years back called me a retard, they've built, which is, you know, I don't remember who said it. Was it Saylor? Impenetrable force of something stupid. But it's very true. There's a culture in Bitcoin of intolerance for stupidity. This was definitely a stupid attempt. You know, like no coiners don't even know how to criticize Bitcoin. The best criticism comes from inside of Bitcoin. And I mean, obviously, the criticism was bad. Also, you know, they never mentioned how it was funded by Ripple, you know, somebody who has skin in the game to see Bitcoin destroyed.
Right. An incentive. So
it's just, the incentives are misaligned. There's a huge moral hazard. But I'm glad that, you know, Bitcoiners have this attitude of just, you know, this anti-fragility, not giving a fuck. And when you come at Bitcoin, you know, honey badger don't care.
Yeah, that's it. Why do you think that you are open and able to discovering Bitcoin?
Look, that's something I ask myself very often. Like, why me? Why is it interesting to me? Why is my fiance not interested? Why is she, you know, every time I open my mouth about Bitcoin, why is she, you know, wanting to kill me?
Rolls her eyes.
I don't know. Honestly, it comes down to curiosity. Like, you have to be curious about the world. I think you just have to be curious and you just have to be open. And you also have to have a personality of, you know, you have to be a person that questions some things. You just don't go with the status quo, but you always try. I'm not like I was never a rebel. I was never, you know, doing things that I was told not to. But there's something about how the current world works just doesn't make sense. And I couldn't put it into words. And, you know, when you have conversations with normal people, they have the same sentiment, but they cannot exactly describe the root issue. Mm-hmm. And then when you discover Bitcoin, which, you know, to me happened by chance, but I was curious and I did the homework. And now once I discovered Bitcoin, I was screaming from the rooftops. Mm-hmm. I was talking about it to everybody because to me it was such a groundbreaking idea, because it's a meme that Bitcoin fixes everything, but it does fix a lot of the problems that we currently see. Don't know if it fixes art. It does fix long-time preference and people wanting to build cool shit for long generations, but it does fix a lot of issues because, you know, just the short-term thinking is really destructive for the world. And you cannot think long-term when your money is constantly stealing from you. And even though people might not know the official inflation numbers, they see that shit is getting more expensive in grocery stores. So, yeah, it's just this huge idea that you, as a curious person, as a person that wants, you know, to see a more just world, you have to explore it. Obviously, at some point, people do get tired of you and start rolling their eyes. But you can always adapt the conversation depending on who you're speaking to. You know, don't go with the crazy elevator pitch with your laser eyes go on, but try to think what the problems are that the person is experiencing and then try to adjust your message according to that. I think that's why I discovered Bitcoin, because I was just curious and I could see that something is wrong, but I couldn't just exactly tell what was it.
Yeah. I would add, like, intellectually honest to that.
Yes.
You know, notion of curiosity. And I think curiosity is severely underrated, particularly nowadays. And what I've found is that Bitcoin unlocks a vocabulary of concepts that allows you to name and identify the things that you are getting confused by or think that are incorrect or wrong or, you know, don't make sense. And once you start to dive down this rabbit hole and you veer off into a few tunnels of Austrian econ and even just concepts within like web development and things like that, some terms that are that exist in those sort of things, like the word daemon constantly rattles around my head, like this thing that runs in the background all by itself. And I mean, I'm not a developer or a coder, have zero clue about any of that stuff. Find it extremely fascinating. But the word daemon and just how closely related it is to demon and this thing that runs in the background, I think I learned that from like Mr. Robot or something. But my point is that you get this vocabulary of words that you can then apply and use to then articulate the problem. Whereas a lot of people that aren't as curious, that aren't as intellectually dishonest, sorry, as aren't as intellectually honest, they're stuck just whinging about the problem, you know, or maybe it's too hard. So fuck it. We'll just keep paying 10, 12 bucks for a carton of eggs.
Yeah. I mean, to fix a problem, you need to think from first principles. And I think that's something Bitcoiners also do well. And to think from first principles, you need to be intellectually honest. You need to go to the root level and figure out what the issue is. And, you know, money is half of every transaction. Everything is built on money. And you can explain like so many phenomena you can explain better when you just know, like when you can go deeper and just, you know, like for example with the inflation or like with art, like it might not seem related to Bitcoin directly to normies, but then once you go a layer deeper and peel the onion, you discover that it's all interconnected. And if the foundation is broken and you build a house on quicksand, it's, you know, it's just not a good idea, and you're gonna have a lot more questions than answers.
Totally. It's that pillar of truth that Opti said on episode one. It's like the idea that Bitcoin allows you to get to the root cause of everything and then build up from there, from the ground up. And everything really is interconnected, particularly with this medium of exchange we call, you know, money, and because it allows that trade to occur. And it also provides the sufficient or the requisite amount of time that you need to pursue all of those things that you're interested in, whatever your craft is, to refine and hone it. Because if you allow yourself the time to do that, inevitably you will get better if you put the time and effort and the proof of work in. But if you're constantly being distracted by something else in order to keep up and to attend to other things, it's going to take a lot longer to get there, if you get there at all, sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. And if you have truth on your side, like you said, what did you say? The pillar.
Yeah, that's Opti's phrase. The pillar of truth. Bitcoin's the pillar of truth.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, if you have truth on your side, I mean, you'll be proven correct. And but that's where education comes in. Like most of the people don't know about any of this, and that's why we have to, you know, we just have to keep educating and speak people's language, you know, try to get in their head and see what their problems are. Like if there's a young couple that is saving for a house, but the prices are just escaping, that's a perfect way to inject Bitcoin into the conversation without them thinking that you're, you're that guy at the party that talks about Bitcoin. You don't want to be that guy. You want to speak their language. And I think the world is slowly waking up. You know, I mean, everything, in my opinion, everything is going according to plan, and it's everything is playing out according to game theory. You know, banks are failing. You know, that's what Satoshi puts on the first, on the Genesis block. And it's exactly what's happening now. Inflation is rampant in many countries. In Europe, in Eurozone, it's like 7%. In the US, 4%. And yeah, it's just, I think Bitcoin's time has come.
Mm. And it's just a matter of speaking their language, meeting them somewhere in the middle, because I dare say I don't think there's anyone that's completely incurious, you know.
But it has to relate to their life somehow, because right. most people don't care about anything. They just care about, you know, feeding their kids and just not dying and, you know, basic things like that. They don't have time to go down the philosophical rabbit hole because they're just not interested.
Yeah. And that's fine, because they really shouldn't. They really shouldn't be an obligation to do that. If you're curious, like if you know you really, really want to do it, fill your boots. But you shouldn't be obliged to do it. But with a fiat system, you are obliged to do it somewhat, because you have to figure out how to keep up with inflation and beat it by investing your spare capital to wherever in order to get the best return. And that's just bullshit. Like, that's a complete and utter waste of time and energy, when, again, as you say, you could be pursuing your craft, you could be attending to your family or whatever it is. And yeah, so you shouldn't need to fall down. Like, you should, sound money just has so many net benefits to a civilization that we just need to get there, kind of thing. And let a thousand flowers bloom, sort of, you know.
Yeah, and it might be hard to think about the what if, because I mean, that's the opportunity cost is always hard to see, because it's like the what if you would have done this, you would have had something else, but it's unknown. That's why mm-hmm. you cannot see. And people have all the shiny new toys, you know, they have the iPhones and the laptops and everything, and they think they're doing well. And it's true. The world is getting better because technology is being deflationary faster than inflation. But at some point, that is also going to stop, and inflation is going to surpass, you know, the advancements we have, you know, technological advancements we have from deflation. And yeah, people just need to, it's a really hard concept, because the world is getting a better place. You know, if you hang out on Bitcoin Twitter, you might not see it, but if you look at basic statistics like, you know, literacy and, you know, like deaths that occur during birth, the world is getting a better place. But then there's also the what if, what would the world look like if people could just focus on their thing? And that's the beautiful thing about division of labor, is mm-hmm. that we don't have to focus on the same thing. And because we have money and because somebody makes shoes, you don't have to make your own shoes, but you can give them your money that you made by being a music producer. So we have, you know, not everybody, we should not do the same thing. We should be specialized in something. And this specialization could go, you know, even further if we had one more thing to worry, one less thing to worry about, which is just having a shitty money, just stealing your labor.
Well, that division of labor, based off of that's facilitated or enhanced by sound money, is like a daemon, right, running in the background. And that's why a lot of people don't understand. I mean, that concept of division of labor is like, I didn't fully grok at that. I didn't have a term for it. I didn't have a word for it. I kind of understood the basic fundamentals of it, but I never fully dove deep until I had someone like a Henry Hazlitt, you know, or yeah, or Mises or a Rothbard or something to sort of articulate and build upon that, or even a Per Bylund, right? And the mere fact that you can wear shoes and listen to cool music because two different people pursued their own self-interest of what they were good at, and then we all net benefited from them. The shoesmith benefited from being able to listen to the cool music, and the music producer can walk to the studio because he's got a nice pair of shoes on. Like, that is a daemon running in the background that most people don't think about, and yet it is pure magic, right?
And it's powered by money.
Right. And if it's the sound money, then you can extrapolate that to any number of tasks. I mean, it's the reason why now there's some people that do their entire job is like to produce a podcast, you know? And that is like on a scale of like, you know, civilization where you can spend your time and energy providing value. I mean, if we have catastrophic failure, then I'm pretty sure Peter McCormick and others, you know, I don't know how their marketing background is going to affect, like, help get food on the table. But
yeah, I don't think there would be any podcasts if we were trading rocks back and forth.
I don't think so.
So this, money unlocks all this innovation. You're totally right.
Yeah. And then, so we've got to be appreciative of that and take stock that we have this. So let's not fuck it up. Let's make it even better, you know? And the best way to do that, I suppose, is Bitcoin. How has discovering Bitcoin changed you?
Well, it has definitely made me more conscious about my time, because at the end of the day, you want money because it gives you freedom, freedom is more time to do whatever you want to do. So I'm really conscious. Like, I don't see Bitcoin as the scarcest asset, but only as a tool to acquire the scarcest asset, which is time. So I'm definitely very conscious about my purchasing decisions. Whereas before, I could have bought the newest gadget, you know, without having a second thought. Now I think it through, and I think about the opportunity cost. I price it in Bitcoin, and then I always think, what is this going to cost if Bitcoin is 10x the current price? And then I'm like, okay, holy shit, these headphones are actually pretty expensive. But also, in general, it has taught me a lot about just the notion of freedom and what it means to be free. Because, you know, obviously in the Western world, we enjoy a lot of freedoms. But, like, if you cannot control your own time and labor, ultimately you're not free. And it's a form of slavery. It might seem harsh to say, because there's people who have, who're still experiencing slavery, like the factory workers in China, for example. But it's still a form of slavery. And, Bitcoin has unlocked all these avenues for me. And also a philosophical side. I never considered myself philosophical and still don't. Because to me, it's really simple. Just do the shit that gives you joy. And, definitely has made me a more philosophical, but also spiritual. Because what is money? Such a deep question. You know, you could say that it's a medium of exchange, store of value, unit of account, which is all true. But then when you peel the layers and you go deeper, it's like, wow, it's money is everything. It shapes the world and the society we live in. It's just a crazy rabbit hole. And I don't know if there's an end to the rabbit hole. I'm still learning.
Well, that's the beautiful thing, Harriet. If you are curious, intellectually honest, and want to learn, this is an endless place to just dive down deep into and find all manner of things that you may not even have thought. Like, for instance, you just mentioned how you never considered yourself as being philosophical, and yet here you are having these philosophical thoughts about the world and how money and humans interact with one another and all that sort of stuff. It's pretty amazing.
I agree.
You know, and you mentioned the spiritual stuff as well. Like, do you mean sort of in a sort of organized religion style, or more of a personal spiritual quality?
Definitely the personal one. So just thinking about, you know, because when you're sort of operating on the default fiat mindset, which is, you know, do your 9-to-5, get your salary, invest it in index funds, and then, you know, and then do that for 40 years, and then there's retirement. You don't really, and that's like the default thing to do. There's no time to think about like the meaning, for example, the meaning of life. Like this is something I ask myself every week, especially after I do something that I don't like. It's like, what the fuck am I doing? What's the meaning of this? And Bitcoin definitely opened that up for me, because now I understand more about, you know, what am I supposed to do with my life and how, you know, how sound money unlocks it for me. How can I better, you know, be myself, if that makes sense. Like, I haven't fully thought this through, but it's fascinating.
When you say like it changed you, and a lot of people obviously answer that question, because it changes you, right? It has to. You think about anything long enough and it will change you, but I tend to spend an inordinate amount of time thinking about Bitcoin, which is, I don't know if it's healthy or not, but anyway. It's that interaction with other people, though. You know, you mentioned your fiance, for instance. There's so many different elements of your day that you could connect back to Bitcoin, and you do have to end up finding yourself just shut up, like, oops, don't open your mouth, just let that one slide. But, you know, how are you negotiating that, those moments? And when you're coming up against those people that are like, yeah, got it, Arson's the Bitcoiner, we hear you, man, but like, come on, just talk about something else. The sports ball's on, you know?
If they're open to learning about the problem that they're facing, I will, you know, I will spend hours with them. Mm-hmm. If somebody is already has a mindset that they don't want to learn, you know, I'm not going to waste my time. And I rarely begin conversations about Bitcoin, but it's when people, you know, again, Bitcoin is the, let's call it the foundational solution, but you cannot bring it into the conversation the first thing, because you have to take a few steps to, you know, to get to the foundation. You have to talk about the issue that they're facing and then tie it somehow to money, which is very often the case. Obviously, not everything is tied to money. Like if somebody breaks their arm, I don't know how Bitcoin fixes that.
Well, you probably got enough money to be able to go to the hospital and get it looked at.
Yes, that's true.
Without going bankrupt.
True. Yeah. And I mean, also something that, you know, going back to the what changed me, it's that you start questioning everything. Because if they, aka the governments or whatever three-letter agency, lied about this thing, what else are they lying about? Like, why are we eating the food that we're eating? And why are the doctors treating us the way they're treating? Is there an alternative? Because clearly, Bitcoin is an alternative, but everybody thinks that fiat is, that's how it's always been, even though fiat is a relatively new thing. So it just makes you question everything, and kind of to the extent where, you know, you become annoying, but you have to. If you're intellectually honest and curious, you have to question everything and then think from first principles, which is then what Bitcoin and Austrian economics thinks teaches.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the concept of praxeology just blows my mind. I wish that I'd had known of that concept. Gosh, long
time. Well, the education school doesn't benefit from you knowing about praxeology.
No. Not at all.
Because it goes directly against their mandate, which is, you know, create basically drones, like worker bees that don't ask any questions and are just programmed a certain way. That's why, for example, I was, you know, I was not taught anything about personal finance, and I had to do it myself because the schools don't really benefit. And public schools, obviously, are funded by the governments. So, you know, you just, yeah. And when you come out of school, you're a default Keynesian and default leftist, if you live in the Western world. And then sort of, yeah. And then you have to dig yourself to find your truth, whatever it may be.
There was a video doing the rounds on Twitter a little while back. Of it was, I don't know if it was a, like a whatever they call it in America, the congressman or senator, someone was questioning Janet Yellen, and he asks her outright, like, are you a Keynesian? And she has this like dumb look on her face and sort of mumbles through a non-answer. You know, you get to that age, you go through those experiences, and if you're not fully conscious of the economic ideology that you've embedded yourself and therefore the rest of your colleagues and countrymen and effectively the whole world in, if you're unaware of that, holy smokes, you know, like we've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, that's why I have huge respect for older Bitcoiners, because for them it's even harder to unlearn everything.
Mm.
Because when you realize that you're wrong and you have to unlearn everything, it takes a lot of humility. And yeah, I mean, if you come with an ego to Bitcoin, you will be humbled really quickly. And yeah, I mean, for some, and also it's really hard to admit when you're wrong, you know. Like, I'm sure Yellen knows that, you know, if she thinks from first principles, like if I asked her, how is printing pieces of notes making society richer? She wouldn't be able to give me an honest answer. She would mumble something and give me a circular answer. Because obviously, like, if you think about it, printing paper notes, that doesn't create wealth because you're just printing paper. There's no value exchange between, you know, entities. And yeah, to admit that you're wrong, it's, you know, when your whole career is built around a certain way of thinking, and yeah, there's a risk of being ostracized. That's why I'm grateful for example, Bitcoin Twitter, is that you get to hang out with fellow psychopaths when other people think you're crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's that quote by the Canadian, it's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it. That was Mencken, H.L. Mencken. I mean, that's such a perfect little quote to summarize and, again, conceptualize some of the issues that we're experiencing, observing, in our world, where before Bitcoin, I was unaware of that quote. I had no incentive to really think beyond that sort of concept. And so now that I have that in my brain, I can then be like, oh, okay, that's cool, incentives. All she's doing is following the incentives. She's not necessarily a bad person by and large. It's just that she's following these incentives, which happen to be really shitty and lead to really shitty outcomes. And therefore, you could politely suggest that she's a shitty person, but she's probably not. She's probably really lovely, and she's probably got grandkids, and she's a really loving mother and all those things, which is fantastic. It's just that she operates on a shitty operating system with a bunch of crappy daemons running in the background that are just causing all sorts of hell to break loose in her brain. And we're the ones that have to deal with the consequences, you know?
I really like that she's not a bad person, which most of these, you know, bureaucrats are not. They're just doing their job the default way, the way they've been taught, and they just have a shitty operating system. I really like that analogy. But yeah, I mean, if you look at Yellen's portfolio, like, I don't think we're going to see any bonds there or like a lot of cash. It's probably, I don't know. I'm pretty sure she has Bitcoin. Maybe that's her strategy. She's just trying to tank the economy so Bitcoin can pump. Who knows? But about the incentives, it's true. You could also say it about Bitcoiners that, you know, obviously we want Bitcoin to pump.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we're shilling it. But the difference with Bitcoiners, we have truth on our side and we have first principles. That's why Bitcoin memes are so good, because they're based on truth. Like, can you even imagine a money printing meme? It wouldn't be even funny. Like, something, a meme that would kind of speak for money printing or against Bitcoin, it wouldn't even work, because there is no, you need that grain of truth for a meme to work, because meme essentially is it's like a prepackaged narrative, like a small pill, like an orange pill, and it's a story, and it works if you have truth. Like, that's why, for example, there's a saying that leftists can't meme, and I'm not a political person, so like I wouldn't identify with like either conservatives or leftists, but it's true, the memes that come out from the left are just really bad, because they just don't make any sense. You know, there is no, the grain of truth is missing. And so Bitcoiners have truth and first principles, and we're not afraid to dig deep, and, you know, to find the truth. You obviously, you need to dig deep, not just look at the, you know, not just look at the world around you, but actually, yeah, you have to go down the rabbit hole to discover the truth.
Yeah, I mean, leftist memes are based off of postmodernism, and postmodernism is all about feelings and however you feel that particular day, hour, minute, whatever. And so, yeah, you're never going to make anything stick if your foundation is as flexible as something as shitty as postmodernism. But then, you know, it reminds me, when you're talking about the memes, a lot of comedians, the funniest comedians, their jokes will hit the hardest that have that element of truth. And I don't know, you think back to like the court, and you had the jester poking fun at the king, and the reason he could get away with it, even though what he was saying was pretty fucked up, and like if it was anybody else, he'd probably lose their head. But because the role of the jester is to lighten the load and lighten the mood and everything. But yeah, they're firing these bullets, these jokes that hit and are hilarious. Because there's an element of truth in them that you can't refute.
Yeah, they're not fiat memes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think comedians in the modern world are sort of the last bastion of freedom of speech, because they still get away, like, not always. Like, for example, you know, Dave Chappelle is pretty outspoken. Mm. And, you know, recently I think there was like somebody tried to attack him. So it's not cool. But I think, yeah, humor is a great way to tell the truth. And humor only works if you have the truth on your side.
Right on. What have you learned about the world and yourself, more importantly, since discovering Bitcoin?
What did I learn about myself? Yeah, that's a great question. Well, definitely that I don't want to be, you know, that I want to focus on things that I want to do, which, you know, I'm still pretty young. I haven't discovered it. But that I don't, when I began my rabbit hole journey, I thought I was interested in investing, but I was actually just interested in not losing my money, not losing my purchasing power. So I've definitely learned that I'm not a finance guy, which the whole finance sector is probably going to shrink a lot on a Bitcoin standard, because a lot of these financial products just don't make any sense on a sound money standard. But also just the fact that I'm so much more hopeful for the world. You know, I used to think I was a pessimist, and I still kind of am, but low key, I am an optimist, because, yeah, I mean, the future is orange and it's bright, and I'm just excited to be on this planet, to see what kind of stuff and how the world is going to look on, you know, a Bitcoin standard. It's just now there's like a huge weight lifted off my back, because most Gen Zs, they're really apathetic and they don't have any hope for their future, because subconsciously they know that things are getting more expensive. And then, you know, there's also social media, which shows them that it only shows them the success cases, you know, the kid that started dropshipping and made the 2 million. So there's huge pressure for them. And that's why depression is also so prevalent in the, you know, Gen Z. And it just, if I had to say it in a few words, is that Bitcoin really gave me hope for the future. And if I wasn't hopeful before, I'm definitely now. And it makes sense to, you know, now I definitely think more long term. I think not just about myself, but also like the future generations, if that makes sense. You know, I think about building a legacy and not just, you know, having this hedonistic lifestyle where, you know, you're just chasing pleasures, but you're actually building something. And that's where, you know, that's why we're huge proponents of DCA, because it, you know, you can actually build your shit and then, you know, also not worry about somebody stealing from you, from your back pocket through inflation. So yeah, Bitcoin has given me lots of hope in that regard.
So cool, man. So cool. Because imagine if all of the stuff that's currently playing out now and has played out for, call it the last 3 years, and Bitcoin didn't exist. You know, it was kind of 2008 plus plus with a whole bunch of extra bullshit added on top. And you didn't have this beacon of hope to, like, even if it doesn't work, I don't even care, because like, we're fucked anyway. If it doesn't work or whatever, then, you know, it's our best shot basically of making the world a better place. And that sounds so hyperbolic, and you know, we can get out the guitars and the drums and everything and have a kumbaya. But like, I think deep down, everybody just wants to leave the place better than they found it. And this is a way, it's a portal to get you there. And that concept of hope is so, so important. I can't imagine. You know, you said you're low-key optimistic. You know, it's kind of, I sort of identify myself in there a little bit, where ordinarily you'd be perceived as fairly cynical and pessimistic, and yet I'm constantly inspired to do better because I can see the potential through this sound money. We call Bitcoin.
Yeah, and you called it a teleport, and I definitely agree. You're pretty much teleporting your value in the present to the future without it being diluted in any way. And I think that's, you know, I mean, in one way, a good money is saleable through time, you know, and it's basically teleporting value to future generations, or also you in 20 years. So I definitely can resonate with that. And about Bitcoin being our best chance, I agree. But I also think that if Bitcoin fails, you know, it still orange-pilled so many people and made us who we are now. And we will build something, like, obviously not Bitcoin, but we will build tools and, you know, that are in line with our values, with Bitcoin values of freedom. And I think that's something you should also consider, that even if Bitcoin fails, the Bitcoiners are still there, and we are still showing the middle finger to, you know, to the bureaucrats and authoritarian governments. And we will, you know, it's basically what I'm trying to say, is that it's not about the end, it's about the friends we made along.
Yeah, 100%.
We made lots
man.
Of friends, and we will build cool shit, even if Bitcoin somehow doesn't succeed, even though that's like, there's a 1% of probability in my head of that happening.
Yes. Oh, mine too. Like, it's by now, certainly. I mean, what we've effectively got is a battle between the productive and unproductive, or as Marty Bent calls them, the counterproductive class. And I'm always going to be putting my bets on a productive class of individuals that are willing to go out and build and create rather than siphon off value, you know, provide value rather than consume value. And
amen.
That's it.
Either you create value or you suck value as a middleman. It's 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the other thing that Bitcoin does allow you to do is actually encourages you to create value and to be of service to other people. You know, Kiwi said that a couple of episodes back was, be of service to people and give it away. And as you were talking before about division of labor, you can pursue your craft, and through the magic of division of labor, you can then be of service and create value for people and give that value to people, give it away to people. And then if they accept it voluntarily, you know, then that exchanges and moves on and iterates and builds and evolves over time. And then you get the shoesmith and the music producer existing in the same city, putting cool things into the world that people want, need, require, whatever.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree. Without transfer of value, like, we wouldn't be having this call. So I think money is definitely important. So we should try to improve it.
Definitely. How do you explain Bitcoin then?
Well, it depends who I'm talking to. I sound like a broken record, but I always try to tie it into their personal situation, you know. To some people who are very freedom-minded, I always, you know, tell them about the freedom aspect. If somebody is just worried about their finances, I always tie it to the fact that, you know, Bitcoin is this alternative where, you know, the monetary policy is known and you can be safe that, you know, obviously there's a price volatility because we still price it in dollars. But you always know that you always have the same amount of Bitcoin, you know, in the from the whole 21 million Bitcoin pie. I always tie it to whatever issue they're experiencing. You know, if they're living an authoritarian regime, obviously at that point they don't need convincing that Bitcoin is useful for them. But yeah, it's tricky. I mean, Bitcoin is just money, which according to the Austrian definition is commonly used medium of exchange. So to me, I just keep it simple, and it's just a way of transferring value across time, which is the store of value aspect. It's a way of transferring value across space, which is, you know, the distance. And then across scales, and it makes everything around us possible because, you know, for you, if you want to exchange value with somebody, you need to find exactly what they want. And then they need to have exactly what you want. And there's always, like in primitive economies, there's double coincidence of wants. And Bitcoin just removes everything. And it's just like flourishing society on steroids. And obviously, that's not probably how I would. I went on a bit of a tangent there, but yeah, I would always think about who I'm talking to when I explain Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's really hard because your brain like just starts pulling in all these.
Just goes everywhere.
It goes everywhere, and you're like, yeah, you just become like Charlie Lee or whatever his name is, Charlie from Always Sunny, not Charlie Lee. That's amazing, man. I mean, the whole concept that this is a protocol piece of software that you can download onto a computer, run it, and it can do all of these things that we've discussed over the last hour or so, it's pretty phenomenal, you know. So I appreciate you spending your scarce time, finite energy on discovering Bitcoin and telling your hero's journey, you know, the Genesis story of how you discovered Bitcoin. It's cool, man. I always love these conversations, so thank you.
No, thank you for inviting me, and I really enjoyed the conversation. It's when you think to yourself about these things, you know, it's different as opposed to talking with somebody. You actually go deeper and you start questioning the things that you think about when you're alone, and you're like, oh, I actually learned about myself today just by talking with another person. So thank you.
Right on, man. Just...